Good afternoon. This is the Nevada Court of Appeals, time set for oral argument. This is our first time to be in court together with all three of us in since January of 2020. It's nice. We had an argument at Boyd Law School that day, and it's nice to be back together, although counsel are still appearing remotely by Blue Jeans. I'm joined today by Judge Jerry Tao to my right, and hopefully you can see him. We're trying to engage in social distancing still, and you can see we have masks on. And Judge Bonnie Bullitt to my left. Counsel have an advantage since you can be in your offices and don't have to wear a mask. We're still under a mask rule here in the courthouse. We've been using this technology, Blue Jeans, now since May of 2020, and it's worked out pretty well. If there are any technical problems, we'll just pause the proceedings, try and correct those problems, and move on. We'll pick up, we'll stop the clock, whatever we need to do. Judge Tao, do you want to say hello to anyone?
No, just I know that this case was referred to us through the pro bono program, and I want to thank both of you for stepping up and being willing to take cases like this. As everybody knows, and I'm sure you guys know, there's always more cases, more need for lawyers than there are actual lawyers who are willing to do this. And I know that taking an appeal, especially, is it's a pretty involved process. The briefing is more complex than it is in district court. You have to go through sometimes voluminous records, and it's a real time commitment. And we really appreciate both of you being willing to do that. It really means a lot to us and obviously a lot to your clients as well. So thank both of you.
Thank you, Judge Tao.
Hey, Judge Bulla, do you want to welcome the parties?
We really appreciate you participating today. We know it's a little difficult because we are all in our masks, and sometimes it's hard to tell when we're going to ask a question. We will do our best not to talk over you and allow you plenty of time to answer any questions that we may have within the time frame that you're given. If you have any questions or concerns, or you cannot hear one of us, please let us know and we'll address the difficulties. Again, I echo both my colleagues. Thank you for your efforts in taking these cases pro bono. We appreciate it.
Thank you, Judge Bulla. And we have in the courtroom guests for the first time. It looks like it's all our staff. So our chambers, law clerks, externs, and our technology person. And you, of course, already talked to our clerk, Kurt Jensen. So we're happy to see all of you, too, in the courtroom. It's been a long time for us to see anybody. Right, the case we have set for this afternoon is number 81746-C, POA, Harris versus Figueroa. This is a custody case, and as Judge Tao mentioned, assigned to us through the pro bono program. Again, we appreciate the efforts of counsel to advocate vigorously here for your clients. So we have Mr. Hendren going first for the appellant, and then Ms. Ramos for the respondent. Mr. Hendren, do you want to reserve any time for a rebuttal argument?
Yes, Chief Judge Givens, thank you. May I reserve 5 minutes, please?
Okay, 5 minutes. You'll get a warning, a visual warning. Have either one of you counsel ever argued an appellate case yet in Nevada?
Chief Judge Givens, no, I have not. This is my first time.
Same here, Judge Givens.
Wow. All right. This is a very good experience then. This is one of the advantages of the pro bono program, to be able to do this. And it's sometimes the first is the best. All right, Mr. Hendren, you may proceed.
Thank you. Lance Hendren on behalf of the appellant, Ronald David Harris. This case, in this particular case, the district court abused its discretion and violated the appellant's constitutional due process rights when it granted the respondent sole legal custody of the party's children without providing the appellant notice of the hearing or an opportunity to be heard. Furthermore, No substantial evidence was presented when the district court awarded the respondent sole legal custody of the party's children in this matter. Now, in this particular case, the record is somewhat small, and I do believe that's important. And first and foremost, because it highlights that there was not, the district court did not provide any explanation, any basis that in fact, that the appellant was in fact given notice and an opportunity to be heard. In fact, the district court seems to go right into the process of awarding the respondent sole legal custody on the simple fact that the appellant is incarcerated. Specifically looking at the record of appeal, page 2, lines 24, going on to the record of appeal 3, page 3 to lines 3, the district court immediately makes a determination, given the fact that appellant's been incarcerated for a long period of time, the district court will go ahead and grant the respondent's request of sole legal physical custody of the four minor children. And that's important because there's no written finding, there's no basis in which the district court comes to this conclusion. There are cases out there, and the ones that I particularly found relate to termination rights, where, for instance, in the matter of parental right as to CJM 118 Nev 724 58 P3D 188 Nev 2002, in that case, in CJM, they cite to parental rights as to QLR, where incarceration alone cannot justify termination of parental rights. Now, in this case, I recognize it's dealing with the respondent being awarded sole legal custody, but I would further direct this court to ROA page 6 at lines 1 through 4, where the district court specifies that appellant has no rights to the minor children right now whatsoever. And again, there was no findings that were made that's indicative as to the stripping or at least the awarding of the appellant, of the respondent being given sole legal custody. Again, these would be violations of the appellant's due process rights that would afford him the opportunity to be heard and make an argument as to why he believes that there is a basis for him to have sole legal custody. It's important to note that sole legal custody does impact the appellant's fundamental rights concerning the custody of his children. He, by having legal custody, would have the ability to make legal responsibilities for his children. Specifically under the Rivero case at 125 Nev at 421 216 P3D at 221, the legal custody gives the parent the ability to making major decisions regarding the child, including the child's health, education, and religious upbringings. The statute specifically, NRS 125.490 subsection 2, indicates that joint legal custody can exist regardless of the physical custodial arrangements of the parties. Therefore, even if we do take for consideration in this case where the appellant is incarcerated, he will still have the ability to make these determinations legal custody, and Nevada law allows him to do such even if he may not have physical custody of the children. I would note that
Mr. Hendren, looking ahead for a moment, let's assume this case is remanded. I mean, how do you see that actually happening? I mean, he's in prison. How is he supposed to communicate with the mother, particularly when the relationship between them is non-existent because of what he did to her daughter?
And thank you, Chief Judge Gibbons. And to clarify that as well, I believe when it is explained as far as the the daughter, that was a stepdaughter. It has no relations to these particular minor children whatsoever.
Right. Her daughter. Maybe I wasn't all that clear with this mask. His stepdaughter, his ex-wife's daughter.
And there would still be an opportunity, nonetheless, for him to communicate by way of phone, letters. There are means that are available that both parents would have the ability. And again, looking at it from legal custody, it's not so much the potential communications as physical custody. Legal custody comes down to things as far as schooling, health, education, those type of things that the parents should still be jointly involved with, not even withstanding the fact that he would be incarcerated. These are determinations that ultimately he, the appellant, can make. And again, I would defer, Chief Judge Gibbons, thank you. I would defer this court as well, that the fact that there was no findings through the district court of why this could not be accomplished. These would be things that would be allowed, for instance, through an evidentiary hearing where the appellant would be able to give indications to how you would specifically be able to cooperate with the respondent in making these legal custody determinations for the minor children in this case. Thank you. Do you see
Ms. Figueroa then would, for example, have to give him a report, say, I'd like the children to go to such and such school because of whatever reason, or have these doctors or go to this church, what, mail him a report and say, that's my plan. What's your input on this situation?
Thank you, Chief Judge Gibbons. Well, I believe ultimately how that typically would be resolved, and with all candor, the court, I don't primarily practice in family court, but having reviewed the material and information, it does appear that there is a mediation process that would be in place. So presumably that those type of inquiries that your Honor is raising would be able to be discussed at a mediation from the onset. That never even took place in this particular case. It's my understanding, according to the court docket, that the respondent had filed an ex parte motion to waive the mediation hearing, which, from what I understand, may be mandatory in nature. And this may be part of the reason why, because there may be an ability to have a consensus on some of these issues that Your Honor asks about.
So did Mr. Harris ever get notice that he could appear at this hearing, the case management conference, by telephone or by video? And did Ms. Figueroa get such notice? Because there's nothing on the record that explains why she was appearing at this hearing and he was not.
Thank you, Chief Judge Gibbons. And no, so reviewing the actual court record itself, again, the district court gives no basis that, in fact, the appellant was served. And in addition, and I was unable to locate because it wasn't cited, but in the respondent's answering brief, they had indicated that there was a certificate of mailing where it was, in fact, checkmarked that it was sent by first class mail. However, having actually done a cursory review this afternoon, looking at the court docket, specifically the electronically filed notice of order of appearance for the case management conference filed on May 22nd, 2020 in this case, that checkbox was actually not marked. It was the other one that was marked where it says it was electronically served. And so I can only assume, Chief Judge Gibbons, that perhaps the respondent was served electronically, but understanding logistically that the appellant could not have been electronically served because he was incarcerated. And again, there is nothing here. The appellant's case statement, he does indicate he was never served with the notice for the hearing that was scheduled specifically on the date July 16, 2020, in which the district court stripped the appellant's legal custody rights and awarded the respondent sole legal custody.
So So assuming for a moment again that the notice of the hearing was sent to him, it seems like there would have been a second notice of, because we're in a pandemic, people are not coming to court, so you can now appear by telephone or blue jeans. Was there any such notice?
From everything that I have reviewed, Your Honor, there was not.
But somehow Ms. Figueroa did appear in that manner, so that would suggest there was some form of communication.
Chief Judge Gibbons, thank you for that clarification. Let me clarify. Nothing that would have indicated it would have been sent, provided to the appellant. I don't know, candidly, how the respondent would have received that information.
Okay. Thank you very much, Mr. Hendren. Do you want to save your remaining minutes?
Can I ask him a question?
Maybe you can add in
a couple minutes, because I'm going to eat up another couple minutes of time.
Judge Tao has a question.
So, Mr. Hendren, let me ask you a practical question here. So, if you're asking for this case, for this order to be reversed and sent back down to the district court for due process, for, you know, a trial and findings and all that kind of stuff, let me ask you a practical question. As a practical question, how is this trial going to happen? The father's in custody. He's going to be in custody for a very substantial period of time. Given the nature of his offense, he's probably incarcerated up in Lovelock, I'm guessing, which is way up in the north of the state.
Tennessee.
Is it even? That's right. So he's not even in state. We're in a pandemic now. So for the time being, you know, district courts are doing a lot of hearings by conference. But as a practical matter, because of potential constitutional issues, you can have hearings, you can have motion arguments. It's an open question about whether you can actually have trials remotely, right? Because how do you do cross-examination? How do you handle exhibits? All this kind of stuff. So as a practical matter, let's even say for a second that you win. What happens next, given this the father's custody status? How is the trial even happening?
Thank you, Judge Tao. And to answer that, I mean, I do recognize, I wish I could provide the court with a definitive answer. I believe some of that would ultimately have to be vetted, and presumably these are purposes of how a case management conference could perhaps proceed and address these issues. Specifically, the appellant did at least use enough efforts to reach out and both file the documents, which he did with the district court. And in addition, he did contact the legal aid center in order to receive me as his pro bono counsel. So presumably he'll at least have the ability to make an argument that he can have counsel assist with him. Now, practically speaking, with the technology aspect, candidly, I don't know, and I couldn't represent to this court how that specific Tennessee prison conducts hearings as far as video or through phone. But that would be one of the things I would assume that his counsel in the district court would look into and find out information for. I do believe, for instance, the technology exists because parolees, for instance, are able to make appearances before the parole commission in order to be heard while they're incarcerated. So presumably there is some type of technological means that may exist. But again, without, I apologize, I just don't know the specifics, practically speaking, other than I have to assume the technology would exist that would allow him to appear, that would allow him the ability to have counsel, that would also allow him the ability to present information then to the court as well, in order for him to have that opportunity, to have that hearing, to have that evidentiary hearing.
Okay. And if you want, we can probably give him a couple minutes, because even asking that question took the better part of a minute.
Nicole, did you have
No, I don't have All right. Thank you.
All right. We'll set it at 3 minutes for your rebuttal argument, Mr. Hendren. Thank you for
Thank
the
you,
follow-up.
Chief Judge Gibbons.
Yeah, unfortunately, we don't know the answer to these questions. Nobody does. So we're in a pandemic, though. It seems like the system is being made as efficient as possible for people to appear without, you know, being present. All right. We'll switch to the respondent side of this case here. And Ms. Ramos, you may go ahead.
Good afternoon, Justices. This is Denise Ramos, counsel for respondent, Ms. Jennifer Figueroa. Your Honor, this case is about appellant's due process rights, proper service for notice of hearing, and the district court's discretion in awarding respondent sole legal and physical custody. This court should find 2 points on here in respondent's favor for the two reasons. First, because appellant did receive notice of hearing, by the District Court's Department of Judicial Executive Assistant when it mailed the appellant's address on record on May 22nd, 2020. And I'll go more deep into that, Your Honor, as far as, you know, the actual notice and the check mark that you guys were discussing about it. Second, when the District Court rightfully used its discretion to award respondent sole legal and physical custody of the party's minor children, it did so considering the circumstances of this matter. It wasn't based solely on Hayes versus Gary.
But Ms. Ramos, let me interrupt you for a minute. Isn't due process both notice and opportunity to be heard? Doesn't it have two components? And what was there about the case management order, because that's really what it is under NRS 16.205, what is it in that order that would have given notice to appellant that custody could have been determined at that hearing?
Your Honor, that if you look at that notice, appellant was correct. It didn't have a check mark at the second page where it says that it was mailed. However, I did, I was able to get a hold of the JEA for this matter, for the department N. I honestly just didn't know how to submit this additional information. But the JEA, Mr. Mark Fernandez, stated that that was a clerical error, that they usually check mark those two boxes, and they always do that. It's a customary item that they do for these case management conferences. So it was the intent to check mark on there, and he did state that they did mail this to the address that was on record for the appellant, Your Honor.
So let's assume then that however it worked, the appellant did receive the notice of the case management order. But what was in that order that would have alerted or advised the appellant that he had an opportunity to be heard on custody issues, or even the custody issues would be addressed at that case management hearing?
Nothing in particular aside from what's already in there, Your Honor. If he failed to attend, then, you know, it would have been something. If he actually received notice of this and understood that failing to attend these matters, the court will go into a best interest determination when deciding these matters and parties not present.
Thank you.
Ms. Ramos, do you do family law?
I generally started doing family a couple months ago, Your Honor.
Okay, so you're a couple months ahead of Mr. Hendren then, right?
Yes, Your Honor.
Hey, but I think Judge Bola's questions go to any type of case. I mean, because case management conferences happen in a lot of cases. In family law, we have the special rule that deals with it. And it's sometimes the court makes decisions regarding custody, but they're only temporary orders. They're not final orders. This case, the judge said it was over, done. The whole case.
Yes, Your Honor.
Can you imagine any scenario that allows a court to resolve the case in its entirety at the very first hearing?
I believe, Your Honor, that the court was taking consideration the circumstances that it appeared on the record as far as Ms. Figueroa's complaint, where she provided that evidence of the criminal record against her daughter, that eventually pretty much led the district court to enter into a award to grant her sole legal and physical custody on that matter. I know that they specifically stated Hazy Gallagher. However, they also specifically stated that they were taking in consideration the circumstances, the criminal history of the appellant, and the how long the appellant was going to be held in custody, Your Honor.
Right. And certainly all of those things would suggest that physical custody would be impossible. But the district court said legal custody would also be impossible. And Mr. Hendren just made an argument about how legal custody would be possible, joint custody.
Your Honor,
how do you respond to his argument?
So to that argument, Your Honor, is that the court, as I stated, the court was looking into what would actually happen if this case is, I mean, obviously this case is already on appeal, but if this is actually going back, we're going to start looking at the best interest of, you know, the best interest factor. That's where they're going to start looking at, you know, why would they award Mr. Harris any type of legal custody when the respondent's not able to have that type of communication, but especially when they have that child still living in the home. She's not going to be able to receive those letters, which she still does because she's mailing those letters home. But if she's not able to communicate with him after what happened to her daughter, which her other children also experienced in that household, it's not two separate cases, Your Honor. It's the same household. This happened while they were all together. It affected the whole family. So considering those circumstances, which the court clearly made a statement about it, said that, you know, they were granting sole legal and physical custody to Ms. Figueroa.
It sounds like those are facts that the court would consider at an evidentiary hearing, but there hasn't been one yet.
No, Your Honor.
Ms. Ramos, I apologize. Let me just follow up. I want to make sure I understood correctly. Are you saying that at the 7-16-20 case management hearing, the court actually applied best interest factors?
Your Honor, the court didn't specify best interest factors. What the court did, if you see on the record of appeal on page 2, you see line 24 and 25, and then it goes on page 3 on line 1, 2, 3, where specifically it was stated that clearly under the circumstances, given his crimes, given the fact that he's going to be incarcerated for a long period of time, I will go ahead and grant your request of sole legal and physical custody, Your Honor. This is the discretion that court at that time considered, which is the circumstances of the crimes that the appellant had committed against the respondent's daughter that affected the whole family and would be a consideration for the best interest factors. He did not specifically state that, but he did state that he is taking consideration the circumstances of this case. He's taking consideration the crimes and how long the appellant will be incarcerated.
Thank you.
So back to how this hearing came about, Ms. Ramos, do you know how your client received notice that she could appear by BlueJeans or Zoom? I assume that's what she did. It's not totally clear from the record, but it sounded like, reading this transcript, that she's appearing in some form. It's a minimum telephone, but it looked like it was video, appeared to be video. Do you know how she got that notice that she could do that and how it was set up and all of those technical parts?
I'm not specifically sure about that, Your Honor.
Okay.
But it does appear to be a video, just from the transcript.
Okay. So the judge starts the hearing talking about what happened in the case previously, but noticeably absent from the record was any description of where is Mr. Harris? Why is he not here at this hearing? Was he given an opportunity to appear and he chose not to? I mean, when I was in the district court, you always identify the parties when you start off the hearing and the lawyers, if there are any. And then for parties that aren't there, you state who they are and where are they and did they fail to appear or did they contact the court or what did they do when they're not there? But there's nothing on the record here. Do you know if anything like that happened before the hearing?
No, Your Honor, I don't.
Does that surprise you that there's no discussion anywhere in the record about where is Mr. Harris other than he's in prison, but why he's not at this hearing in some other format?
No, Your Honor. I would take that they would have to make those determinations on the record and make sure that they do check for that type of appearance. However, in this court, I do not see that they did that, Your Honor.
Okay. Does that seem fair?
No, Your Honor.
Okay. So you brought up some good points about what could be discussed if there was a hearing. But does that mean, evidentiary hearing, does that mean there are two sides to this and that an evidentiary hearing is actually going to be needed and the judge will have discretion to make the call, but shouldn't he hear from both sides?
The thing is that I believe that there was discretion and that he was taking consideration, like I said, these factors and the circumstances. However, he did not verbalize it and wrote it down on the so it could be on the record. He just simply stated, I'm taking consideration the circumstances, which you know implies that he was taking consideration all the pleadings filed, any of the arguments, the respondent's complaint, the appellant's 12-page answer, anything that he could get on the record to make this final determination once the appellant was not present, Your Honor.
Okay. So, but the court had another chance here. So sometimes the court doesn't say everything that it's thinking at a hearing. But when the written order is entered, the court has a chance to put it in writing why it's doing what it's doing. And it can say lots of things that were not mentioned at the hearing. So in this case, it looks like the written order is on a pre-printed form from the Family Law Self-Help Center. Who filled in the boxes on that form? Like Ms. Figueroa is granted sole legal and physical custody. Now, who filled in that box?
It was Ms. Figueroa, Your Honor.
All right. So she fills out the form order, gives it to the judge, and the judge just signs it?
And they review it, Your Honor, and they sign it. I mean...
Okay. So if the judge was thinking something about the best interest of the child, wouldn't the judge have handwritten it in there or have redone the order himself so it covered that sort of thing?
Yes, Your Honor.
So you indicated you talked to the judicial executive assistant. If you wouldn't mind talking to the Family Law Self-Help Center, too, and ask them about this form, at least have spaces in the form where things could be written in. I mean, the best interest factors, we all know, have to be covered when there's a custody decision. But there's not really a space on the form for it.
Yes, Your Honor.
Yeah. So this particular order, the form order, do you think it passes muster for a family law custody decision?
The actual order that was submitted in this matter, no, Your Honor. I don't think, check the box orders actually pass muster.
Right.
But
so I mean, we have essentially three different issues in this case: the due process. As Judge Bulla put, it's not only the notice, but it's the opportunity to be heard. So it's the notice about what's going to happen at this hearing, which is a case management conference, not a trial. Then the opportunity to meaningfully present a case. Then the decision requiring certain elements to be discussed, considered, and put into the written order. It seems like there are problems in all three areas.
Yes, Your Honor.
Am I looking at this wrong in some way?
No, Your Honor.
All right. So if there was a hearing, then that's something to be sorted out later about how Mr. Harris could appear. Is he going to appear by video, by telephone? Is there going to be evidence presented ahead of time? Obviously, he's incarcerated, so it's very difficult to do anything, but it seems like there would be something put on the record as to what the accommodations are for him, and that no one in this court is suggesting that he be given special treatment or anything else. It's just a question of, in the context of due process, everybody gets the right to have a full and fair hearing with proper notice as to what's going to happen at this hearing. That seems to be the issue then for this court and possibly again for the district court. Okay. Do you have any concluding comment, Ms. Ramos?
No, Your Honor, that was all.
Okay. All right. Thank you. Thank you again for taking this case through the pro bono program and doing the follow-up extra work, too. All right, Mr. Hendren, we'll go back to you then for any rebuttal argument. You have up to 3 minutes.
Thank you, Chief Judge Gibbons. And actually, I believe this court has addressed the concerns that specifically why there is a need for an evidentiary hearing in this case and highlighted each one of those individually of what an evidentiary hearing would actually accomplish. So I would respectfully submit it to this court unless there's any questions for me in particular.
So let me ask you this, Mr. Hendren. I think, you know, maybe we need to separate out legal from physical custody, but let's focus on physical custody for a second. I gather this is what Ms. Ramos is saying, although she doesn't, you know, use these exact words, but it's not like the district court had zero evidence. There are certain things, arguably, that the district court could have found or could have taken judicial notice of, right? The district court can take judicial notice of things that are that cannot reasonably be controverted, right? And in this case, I gather she's suggesting that it can't reasonably be disputed that he's in custody, out of state, that he's going to be in custody for many, many, many years, and therefore physical custody of any kind is an impossibility. So her argument, I'm considering it maybe a little generously, it's not that there's zero evidence, there is some evidence. And what would he have added had he actually been at a hearing when physical custody is an impossibility? So why isn't that evidence that the court could take judicial notice of enough to say, okay, at least as to physical custody, it's an impossibility. There's nothing else to be done here. Legal custody is different, but as to physical custody. So what's your response to that?
Thank you, Judge Tao, for that question. To submit to the court, I don't believe that it really the focus on the appeal is more so on the legal custody, but I recognize that Your Honor has asked about the physical custody aspect. The way that at least I could address that is the appellant has indicated that he is currently litigating this through post-conviction in Tennessee. So presumably that has not exhausted itself. I don't candidly, with all due candor to the court, I don't know where that is in the process. I don't know what the success is on the merits of that, but arguably if that were ever to be overturned, then certainly that could allow him the ability for physical custody. I believe maybe the focus more so maybe on the legal custody aspect. It seems to be there is at least at this point in time, there's somewhat of a understanding that physical custody may be impractical like Your Honor does indicate. Thank you. Okay.
Judge Bullard, do you have anything else?
No, I don't. Okay. Thank you.
All right. Thank you, Mr. Hendren, very much for your argument, too, and also assisting through the pro bono program. And maybe this will pique your interest a little bit in doing some family law.
Thank you, Chief Judge Gibbons.
Either that or it'll scare you away, right?
Yeah. Thank you, Judge Bullard. Thank you, Judge Tao.
All right. Thank you again. This matter will be taken under submission for a written order to be filed in the near future.
Thank you.
Thank you again, both
of you.
Thank you again.